Ever thought about Botox but worried you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, Brits spend more than a quarter of their money in Tesco.
You can subscribe to Lidl on Spotify to listen to ambient supermarket sounds.
And in Dubai, you can do your weekly shop by boat.
It's time for the big shop. Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Jack and I'm here with two expected items in my bagging area. QILs, Manu and Alex.
Hello.
Don't
want
to be in your bagging area.
So we're going to talk about supermarkets, but more broadly, how people buy their stuff.
Yeah, for any international listeners, the big shop is a cultural thing. We have big shops, but the big shop is the thing you do.
I think a marker of adulthood when you do the big shop. When you get to that point, you're like, it's time for the big shop.
But it's also, for me, a marker of childhood, like going on the big shop with my parents.
We used to go every Friday.
They'd maybe let you have a cookie.
Yes,
could get a baguette and they'd let you eat it all the way round.
I'd be pestering them all the time. Like, we knew we were allowed like one, maybe two treats.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, today I want a Florentine, so I'll save myself.
Oh
during
my
the
God,
cheese
that's such an unbearable child.
I didn't realise it wasn't illegal, and it is totally fine to eat food whilst you're in the supermarket.
Are you allowed to do that? I assumed it was kind of illegal.
I think it's probably fine, only because my family do it a lot.
Your family are a bit on the fringes of society, aren't they? But what isn't illegal, because nobody's paid for it yet, is someone taking something from your trolley or your basket and putting it in there.
Yeah, that's so true.
No one does that.
Apparently Brits make 490 million supermarket trips every month.
Wow. Yeah, I read 221 trips per person per year.
I was actually looking into the etymology of supermarket, and then I went into...
Is it not really obvious?
Well, you'd think so.
From the proto-Indo-European supermarket.
So you got the super bit, which is from the Latin super, from above, over,
massive,
but also beyond, so outside of.
Yeah.
So in some circles... in the past, supersexual meant platonic, which I thought was really interesting.
So like you had risen above the
basic. Yeah, so it's like, I have a supersexual relationship with my brother. It's completely platonic.
But I suppose it is above, it's beyond markets in a way. You're not going to individual places. It's a completely different experience.
That's true, because that's supernatural. It's things that aren't natural.
And then you've got the Greek hyper, that you have a supermarket, which is...
A big shop,
and then you have a hypermarket, which is an even bigger one.
The hypermarché, they're very European.
Yeah.
Supermarkets sell all the groceries you need in one place, and it's discounted. Mm. And then hypermarkets are beyond that.
Clothes.
It's like clothes
and
really big
furniture,
which is actually closer to what like an old department store.
Yeah,
was,
that's true.
Right?
I reckon the next one is Ultra.
Ultra market. They'll be in space. That'll be what they build on the moon. When you go into a supermarket, do you beeline for your stuff, or do you browse and go up and down all the aisles like a lawnmower?
It depends where I'm shopping. If I'm shopping in the UK and I need a thing, I'll just go to the thing. If I'm shopping on holiday, I will spend so much time. I don't need anything.
It's part of your holiday experience.
I just want to look at all the biscuits. Yeah. What are you hiding? What flavours do you have?
That's true.
What funny names do you have, like Schmack and Plop?
Isn't it when you go to a foreign supermarket, isn't it so amazing how alienating it is?
Yes.
And then you realise how homely a local supermarket is. You're subconsciously, you're used to every brand and every layout and the sound sounds and the feel. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to any other kind of supermarket, it's so weird.
I love it.
The UK is quite unique in its supermarketness because I think at the moment, at least, profit margins are very low.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that competition has introduced that. And we do have a wide range of options. And the public opinion of which supermarket you shop at is so intrinsically linked to, like, our class system.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
In France, they're way more like the CEO in Marseille will eat roughly the same as, like, a dock worker in Marseille. Yeah. But in Britain, like, that is not the case.
No, like, it's like, it's almost like fashion labels almost. Yeah. Are we going to rank like the posh and least posh supermarkets?
Mm,
yeah,
because everyone has this in their head and they all differ.
It should be on the British citizenship test, because you don't understand the country until you understand the supermarkets. What do we think are the most expensive and what do we think are the cheapest? And then I've got the actual facts right here.
Aldi
cheapest.
Oh, I was going to say Lidl.
Okay.
Waitrose most expensive.
Okay.
Co-op most expensive.
Okay. Which magazine did, I think this is the June comparison.
Oh, so wow. It's so really
very recent. What they have is they have like a basket of goods, 95 brand. I mean, I'd say that's a trolley of goods, actually. But branded and own labels. Aldi is the cheapest.
Yes.
Aldi is the cheapest. And that cost of that basket was £163.
Okay.
Ooh. And actually, Lidl was £164. The most expensive, Waitrose, £229.
Right.
It's a big difference. Yeah. Tesco's was £200, with the club card only £194. So like you're not saving that much for giving all your data to Tesco.
They're also not
playing the club card right, because if you do it properly, you can halve your bill and it's very satisfying.
That's true, but that's because you're letting your shop be guided by
offer.
Don't let them choose what you want to eat. I'm practically earning money with this like peach liqueur that I'll never drink.
Should we talk about the history of supermarkets then? Where did supermarkets come from?
Ancient Greece. Well, firstly, what defines a supermarket? Because like we've always paid for goods, for food, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the old, think of the Wild West and like Western movies, you'd go into like a wooden shop with a bell over the
door. I was thinking exactly this. And you give them a list of stuff and they go to the back and get it.
Exactly,
So that's, I think, shopping before the supermarket was very, very different. So you, like you said, you took your list to a grocer. They grabbed everything for you. They weighed it. They wrapped it. Often you didn't even pay then. You had like a credit system.
Mm. Right. You just pay at the end of the month.
Yeah, so you basically just give someone a list. It sounds great. Give them a list. They give
it
you
sounds dangerous, I think.
Right, yeah. But there was a lot of adulteration.
People would
get the tea sweepings from the floor and put it in.
No.
Which is kind of why we invented brands anyway.
But there's also the idea of having like multiple shops for multiple products. So say in France they still do this really well. Like you have the butcher, you have the cheesemaker.
Yeah.
You go to a different establishment that specializes in that one thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we have old Piggly Wiggly.
Piggly Wiggly.
Piggly Wiggly.
It's so funny that the history almost starts in fairy tale.
It's funny.
It was a guy called Clarence Saunders, right? He opened this shop, which he called Piggly Wiggly, in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. In, when was it?
1916.
Yeah.
1916. And he called it Piggly Wiggly, apparently, just because it sounded silly and people would remember it and ask him what it meant and
stuck
in their head.
Like, he had a few stories. So one was like, oh, he was on a train and he was thinking up this idea, which we'll talk about what his big innovation was.
These amazing
was.
Ideas happen on trains. Yeah, Harry Potter,
like,
Mickey
I
Mouse.
Saw a pig. And I was like, ah. Oh. And then there was another. There was a direct.
I saw a pig and thought, I'm going to set up a supermarket.
So I watched a really good little documentary made by the kind of YouTubers and researchers, John Green and Johnny Harris. Apparently, when he was describing the naming process, he said, the name came from out of chaos and in direct contact with an individual's mind.
What does that mean?
Whoa.
He doesn't mean anything.
He's
so mad.
Okay.
Anyway, so his big idea, which did really, really well, was to just completely remove clerks from the process.
Right.
So no longer did you take your list to a random man and maybe get floor shavings in return. You went and you browsed the aisles yourself and you helped yourself to things. And apparently when his first store opened, customers would go to the staff and ask them to help and they'd be like, no, you need to do this yourself.
Be free.
Wow, that must have felt like a bit of a step down to like entitled people who were like, wait, I have to do it myself?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a bit like when self-checkouts came in. Mm. That's a step forward, but then it also feels like a step back.
And it spread all over the US.
I think having individually priced products was quite a big thing as well.
Oh,
like,
he did
as
that.
In, yeah. Everything actually has to be packaged and stuff. So, yeah, pretty groundbreaking. You go and follow a set route. So it's a little bit like IKEA, I guess, actually. Like, you did go up and down the aisles, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't particularly big, and it didn't have particularly cheap goods, which some people argue is the main function of a supermarket, is it's got everything that you need at cut prices.
Well, that's apparently what the reason the Smithsonian define a different place as the first true supermarket called King Cullen, which was a former garage in Queens, New York, that was opened by a man called Michael Cullen in 1930.
Confusingly called King Cullen when it's in Queens.
Yes, that's true.
Also Cullen with a K spelled incorrectly. Oh yeah,
his name is a C. So I didn't realise that.
Apparently it's because his son was drawing a picture of him in a crown and was like, King Cullen, like dad. And then was misspelt it and they were like, we love it.
Love to do a King Kong success.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. And anyway, the Smithsonian Museum regard this as the first true modern supermarket because it was low prices, large volumes, parking. Like, they had chain marketing as well. So like this was actually like a put together experience. But I think the rise of the big shop came post-war because that's when people started getting big fridges, people started getting cars, and so like you could actually go and do a week shop and then store it. So like I think like 1950s, and that's when Britain had its first supermarket moment.
Yeah, true. Well, I remember reading that the first supermarket was 1916, and then the first supermarket in the UK was 1951. I thought, what took so long?
I think it was probably the wars. Yeah. I think it's probably because there was no food to put in them, Jack.
That's true. Rationing had only just finished.
Yeah. Rationing was literally just finishing.
Still on, actually.
Yeah, you're right, in the 50s. Yeah. Then I would say the next big milestone was the 1960s, the hypermarket, which we mentioned earlier. This is really like a really European thing. Carrefour, that opened just on the outskirts of Paris in June 1963. And that's like supermarket, department store. It sells clothes, it sells appliances.
It can't be the biggest supermarket in the world. Because I know Walmart is the biggest employer in the world.
But really? The biggest, I don't know about company size, but the biggest individual supermarket / hypermarket. I completely assumed it would be American. It would be a Walmart. And it is a Carrefour. It's in Villiers, presumably outside actually. It's probably too big to fit inside the town. Villiers-en-Bière in France.
The beer town.
The beer town in France. And its floor is the size of 4 football pitches.
Wow. Yeah.
Should we do a little bit on the founding of some of the British supermarkets?
It's one of the things I found with so many of the supermarket names. It's just like portmanteaus.
Obviously, Marks & Spencer was founded by Michael Marks and Tom Spencer.
And
two very British names.
Something I didn't realise is Waitrose is Mr. Wait and Mr. Rose.
Yeah, I thought it was because you wait in rows to pay for your shopping.
Mr. Wait and Mr. Rose were actually in business with Mr. Taylor, but he quickly left.
They could have done Waitrose.
Oh, that doesn't kind of roll off the tongue.
Well, it doesn't now because we live in a Waitrose universe. But like, if we grew up learning about Waitrose,
I guess because it used to be Waitrose and Taylor, it's quite easy to make it Waitrose.
Naturally, everyone knocks off the Taylors. Yeah.
The Tesco's one I'm most confused about. So it was a guy called Jack Cohen who founded it in 1919, and he mushed his name together with the tea merchant who supplied him, who was called Thomas Edward Stockwell.
Yeah,
but so I don't think he was in business properly.
No, it was kind of one of the things that he sold, because he started as a market store salesman in Hackney. One of the things he sold was tea. I think maybe he was like making up a name and you look around and he's got tea crates around him and it says T.E. Stockwell on. So he just took T.E.S. and then he took Cohen from his name and he just put it together.
Londis?
Oh, yeah.
London District Stores.
Oh.
L-O-N-D-I-S.
Asda. That came out of like a Yorkshire merging of a butcher business and a dairy business. So there was a company called Associated Dairies, the DA, but the ass comes from these two guys, the Asquith brothers, and they visited a Piggly Wiggly store in America and kind of got...
I can't take it seriously. I know. Oh,
they got inspired, and so they kind of brought the idea back here.
Do you know about Aldi and Lidl? Yeah. So Aldi gets his name from the founders were brothers with the surname Albrecht.
Yeah,
Carl and Theo.
It's a discount. So it's Albrecht discount.
Yeah, I did this on Notice Things of Fish, actually. Nice. Yeah.
Cool. And then Lidl, the founder was Mr...
Lidl.
No, the founder was Mr. Schwartz. But the thing is, he didn't want to call it Schwarzmarkt because that means black market.
Nice. Was there any reason for picking Lidl then as a random name?
Yeah, so his dad was Mr. Schwartz Sr. was in partnership in a fruit selling business with Mr. Lidl.
Oh, okay. So this is a kind of little...
It was kind of honorific.
Oh, that's nice.
But for legal reasons, he couldn't. So he found a random retired painter and school teacher called Mr. Ludwig Lidl. And he paid him 1,000 marks to use his name. So this guy, Ludwig Little, I mean, this is the 70s.
Why did you have to pay him? Like, can't you just use, it's a surname. Is that
I suppose you have to ask him. Maybe he demanded some money and he haggled him down. But
in the same way that like Weatherspoons is just named after like a random geography teacher of the guy who's founded it.
Maybe
do you have to pay someone to
risked,
use the surname?
I think it's just polite.
Yeah, maybe.
So Aldi and Lidl both came out of Germany and they're described as the discounters in this country. Mm. So they're relatively recent imports to this country. We got the Aldi arrived in 1990, Lidl in 94. Mm-hmm. And basically what they do is they've got a slightly different model. So they're privately owned as opposed to publicly floated on the stock market, which means they don't have to push profits every quarter. They can sort of sit and run at a loss for 9 years in a row and then make a profit in the 10th year. But basically what they do is they strip away all the essentials, so you get quite a basic shopping experience. And also they have very few individual unique items. So they'll only have roughly 2,000 items at any one time, whereas a place like Tesco will have 20,000.
Yeah.
So that limits overheads because you don't have to worry about, oh, we're running out of three types of pate. Like they've got one type of pate.
Yeah, it's just simpler and cheaper to run,
And also the staff, they've got extra good barcodes so you can scan through. Mm,
the barcodes run the entire length of whatever it is.
And the staff get like assessed on how fast they're... Yeah. They've really identified that like as like an efficiency point.
Did you see the Aldi training centre?
No.
It's like an empty like mock-up supermarket in Germany where all employees go and they do like a week's intense training course.
That's crazy.
Just like scanning things.
Love to do that so
I actually saw in my local Aldi, they've got a sign saying, please pack your bags. So basically what you do, and now it's all self-scan, well, it's not all, but
You don't pack your bags at the end of the checkout.
Exactly. You're meant to like carry it all, presumably in your arms, to this bar at the end.
Kind of like repacking your bags after they've gone through security in the
You're
out away from the machine.
Recombobulation
and like sort yourself out.
But the sign says, please pack your bags over here. This is how we keep prices low.
Oh.
Which I guess is like, was always the case, but it's funny that they're actually advertising it now. Mm. It's really good competition for the others, the established like Tesco, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, whatever, because they're having to compete now because the Aldi and Lidl are growing market share year on year.
But there are two Aldis. I talked about this on Fish as well. Like,
yes.
Because it was set up by two brothers who ran it together for years, but then disagreed on how a business should be run. So they split it up. It's such a German thing to do, to split your country up. They at least split this in North and South instead of East and West this time. Oh, but like, there's Aldi North and Aldi South. Aldi Nord and Aldi Süd.
Oh,
and in this country, we only have Aldi Süd.
Yeah, so like most countries only have one or the other because they've sort of agreed separate patches.
That sounds quite peaceful, actually.
So if you go to America and Australia... And Italy and the UK have Aldi Süd, obviously South Germany.
Yeah.
And then Aldi Nord is in North Germany, but also Poland. And they spread it to Poland.
And then they annexed Austria, didn't they?
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Okay, this week let's not do lunchboxes, let's do shopping baskets.
Yes, all right.
It's time for our first shopping basket, and this week that is mine. I have brought you guys a planogram.
Oh, nice.
I have a picture of planogram too.
What is a planogram?
It basically shows product position and like shelf level and the way things should face.
And they're kind of the behind the scenes plan to running supermarkets. We've mentioned them before, I think, in passing.
So I want to talk about the psychology of supermarkets and how they get you to spend as much money as possible.
How we're being manipulated without even realizing
it. Yeah.
Like, there's a whole industry around like laying out the supermarket and where all the products go and how the products fit that we just never see or think about. Like when you go into a supermarket, it's usually very neatly arranged and you know, you can see all the different products and stuff like that, but there's been so much negotiation and money changing hands as well. Like there are whole companies that just run the stocking of supermarkets, and so like they negotiate between all of the people supplying all of the goods and stuff and then the supermarkets.
So if you piss someone off, you might end up like really, really low down by the floor.
You have to have a really good relationship with the buyers. Like the buyers at Tesco and Sainsbury's are very powerful people.
And do you think it changes it because like obviously the primo bit is eye level for adults for certain products, like premium products. Do you think it changes like depending on nation and height difference between different
interesting. So like average, shorter. Yeah, probably.
But also what they do is they put things that kids will want a bit lower, so it's a kid's item.
Yeah,
right?
If they were really smart, they put a little side door in the trolley so that kids can put their stuff in without your parents noticing. Because the problem is that you pick your stuff up and then you try and put it in the trolley and then your mum notices. So
that is true.
I love it. Yeah. There was a study in 2014 called "Why Is Captain Crunch Looking Down at My Child?"
Oh yeah.
So this was about how cereal boxes that have animated characters on them, if your kid's making eye contact with something with a face on the cereal box, they're more likely to get excited about it and they're more likely to ask you. So there's this whole thing with kind of supermarket psychology about pester power.
So they've drawn the character of Captain Crunch to have to be looking down so that kids get the impression that he's looking down at them from the shelf.
Yeah. I read this for adults as well. It works on adults.
Oh, really?
Except they empathize with it. So you get an instant little sense of like
he's hot.
Tony the Tiger's like flirting with me.
I was gonna say the guy throwing the ball on the Scottish oats. He's pretty hot.
Oh yeah, the Scottish hot oats guy.
Okay, hottest food mascot.
What about the new Italian Captain Birdseye?
Oh yeah, he is quite hot. Yeah, he is a dilf. Yeah.
Oh, Raisin Lady. She's hot.
Ooh. Yeah. A Sunkissed, a Tropicana Lady.
A Sunkissed.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the Espanola olive oil brand. That's so posh.
Green Giant.
Oh yeah. What about the Pepperami guy?
Yeah, it is incredible. There are entire companies that specialize in planning in an insane amount of detail how every single shelf and aisle looks, how the supermarkets are laid out, where every single product is. But the whole thing is kind of done digitally. And so actually also if you're a brand and so you sell, I don't know, you sell like peanut butter or something, you want to make sure that you are supplying these planogram companies with digital versions of your products so that they've got a 3D model of your peanut butter so that they can put that on the shelf in their 3D virtual supermarket so that then the supermarkets can check out what the shelves are going to look like and approve it. It's so weird that they're building all of these supermarkets in pretend.
That's amazing.
So that they can apply that to real life.
And then
so
do they put like custom-built Sims through?
Well, I did read about virtual Walmart. It's actually for training staff. Walmart runs a lot of Walmart academies around America. There are over 200 of them. And since 2017, it's also trained its staff with virtual reality. It bought loads of Oculus headsets.
No way!
Yeah, they give them to the trainees, and the trainees are then suddenly inside a massive Walmart. It's kind of like back rooms or something. But they rehearse things like Black Friday crowd stampedes.
Oh my God.
How to deal with angry customers and like how to use the pickup tower.
This is the end days, surely. This is why we're getting punished. Don't know.
I'd rather be trained virtually. Like, you could work from home, could be trained from home, and like to learn the layout of a supermarket, it's probably quite useful.
I like to think they go to the makers of famous zombie games and like use the same engine. You're like
mowing down your customers with a price gun. Yeah. I'd like it if characters from all the other computer game shops there so like the guy from like Metal Gear Solid's like wandering around with a basket.
Mario, yeah. It's me. Yeah. Pac-Man just goes up and down the aisle. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Okay, it's time for our second shopping basket. Manu, what have you brought in your basket?
Today I have brought a receipt. I'm going to set it on fire.
Oh, no.
I wanted to talk about supermarket receipts because they are not printed in the same way as you'd print anything else. Like, if you think about your standard office printer, it's got like an inkjet, you put the ink in it, it smushes the ink onto the paper, and then you have your printed document.
Uh-huh.
With supermarket receipts, the ink is kind of already in the paper. So if you set it on fire, it's going to go really, really dark.
This is like a political statement against Sainsbury's you're making now.
I know. So. Look at that. It does smell really weird, but there's a really big black splodge over the receipt. So,
explain.
This is a thermal receipt. So it's basically a kind of way of thermal printing, which is super clever. I found this really good explanation on tillrollworld.com for all of your thermal
bookmarking
receipt needs. They call it a magic coating, but it's got like several microscopic layers. And one of them is a thermal active layer, and it has two chemicals in it, and they are held apart in like a solid state at room temperature. So these two chemicals are a dye called leucodye and a developer, which is a type of acid. So when you apply heat to this paper, it causes a chemical reaction between this dye and acid that activates the dye and creates that kind of darkness. The inside of the printers, they've got all of these tiny, tiny little like heat patches. So they've got hundreds of dots and they can like create these really, really super, super sharp images. If you think about a barcode, like that's tiny.
Because if you look really closely, you can see the letters are all made up of lots and lots of dots.
So yeah, what's even cooler is if you have some money to sploosh at tilrollworld.com. to spend at tilrollworld, you can get like different plies of roll. So it's just like toilet paper. They sell single, double and triple ply. And this is basically if you want to make like multiple copies of the same thing. So rather than having to print out like a customer version you just get like... So yeah, that's the thermal receipts.
Why isn't my office printer thermal? Because it's quick, isn't it?
It is really fast. The ink, so the pigment in it, does degrade quite quickly.
That's true. Like they fade really fast, don't they? They're quite good for spies, though.
Yeah.
If you need a secret printer that you then want to
burn after reading.
So it's mad because like many of the oldest written texts in the world are receipts. So the first example we have a writing from like ancient Mesopotamia.
Even the Rosetta Stone and stuff.
Yeah.
Can you imagine like paying at the checkout and they're like, would you like a receipt? And you say yes, and then you just get this like massive thing of stone. Well, speaking of other firsts, actually, the other supermarket trappings, first trolley.
Oh.
Well, what year? Give me a year, guess.
19?
Yes.
34.
Yes. Oh, so close. 37.
Or BCE.
It was a grocer called Sylvan Goldman in Oklahoma. And he noticed that customers stopped shopping when their baskets got too heavy to carry, which is like
It's a limiting
nightmare.
Factor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he came up with like a wheeled frame that you could slot two baskets on. So that's basically the first trolley.
And then
I think it evolved this. But then when trolleys really started being introduced, shoppers weren't very keen on it because women were like, oh, it's like pushing a baby carriage. This is weird. And men thought it was like undignified and like not very masked. Yeah, exactly. Because they want to like, be lifting up, lifting up your double basket.
Is that why Lidl don't do like little baskets?
I got so annoyed when they stopped doing that.
I mean, some of them still do, but so often you have to like take the enormous
It's probably to encourage you to get more. Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah. But Goldman, in order to get people enthusiastic about it, he apparently hired models to push the trolleys around his shops. So they're like, look, this really hot people are doing it.
It's not hot if one of the wheels is janky, though. That's not hot on anyone.
I just love the idea of a shop full of models that are pushing trolleys around.
So funny.
When I was a kid, the real sublime joy of French supermarkets is for some reason they had it and we didn't, is those little mini kids suit trolleys.
With the flags. They were so much fun.
And
we
didn't always have them, but I was like, go shopping, I really want to. And that just felt like...
Yeah, isn't that so funny how exciting that seems? Yeah.
Something else on early shopping.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The first online supermarket order was completed in 1984 by a Mrs. Snowball.
Mrs. Snowball, was she a cat?
No, she wasn't. She's 72 years old.
But also, wasn't that before the World Wide Web?
Yeah, like, 1984.
How did she do it? That's very impressive to do the first online ship before the World Wide Web has been invented.
How's this witch managed it?
And at that age as well.
No, I think it was done through a television.
Oh, I remember this. She used a television and a remote control system connected to a video text system.
Ooh.
Which I think was kind of like CFAX, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I think so.
What did she order, Doina?
She ordered eggs, cornflakes, and margarine from a local Tesco.
Nice.
Boring.
Which, very nice.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like very, very much to order, I've got to say.
Also, was it delivered to her?
Yes, it was. It was designed to help old people with limited mobility. So this was kind of helping vulnerable people.
That makes sense.
It makes me think of that meme, that old woman telling her granddaughter, I just ordered my shopping through the television. And she's like, okay, grandma, let's get you to bed.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are no drive-through grocery stores, are there?
There are probably in America. There is a float-through grocery store in Dubai, which I mentioned in the intro.
Oh, yeah,
it's actually not really a float. I looked it up hoping it would be something you float your boat through, but actually it's kind of more like the old school of shop before a supermarket, in that you park your boat next to this sort of tiny ferry boat, and that's got the essentials in, which there's someone in there who will sell them to you.
I'm pretty sure there are parts of the world, I might be making this up, but say in Thailand, where you have a similar floating market. So if you're sailing through, you have little boats along a...
It makes sense. Along the, I mean, it's like a little tiny island shop,
And then all of the really buoyant foods, you could just float
them
down.
In the river,
Yeah, that's such a nice idea, You could have a small river for the checkout instead of a conveyor.
Genius. All of the treats are just floating around
like the log flume.
And then your bag for life could be a sieve with holes in it, so all AI catches it all. The first barcode to go on the receipts and on the products, obviously.
1982.
1974. So the first commercial universal product code, it's called UPC, was scanned on the 26th of June 1974 at Marsh Supermarket in Troy, Ohio. It was on what product?
Troy, Ohio. What do they eat in Ohio?
Is it something valuable?
No.
Oh.
In fact, it would have been a last-minute grab impulse purchase.
Chewing gum.
It was a pack of chewing gum. Yeah. A pack of Wrigley's chewing gum. Yeah.
Oh, I looked into security tags a little bit. And then all I could find was how to disable them. So I'm not going to be talking about that.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural, because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Time for our third and final shopping basket, and this week that is Alex. What have you brought?
I have brought a supermarket with nobody in it.
How conceptual.
Sounds relaxing.
Because I want to talk about the future of supermarkets and how all the supermarket stores seem to be absolutely hellbent on employing nobody and filling supermarkets with robots and self-checkouts and making us, the consumer, do all the work.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever shopped at like the Amazon Fresh?
Loads, yeah. Because there used to be one literally down the road from me.
The point being, you don't pay.
Yeah,
because you do pay. But
I've never done it.
The idea was that you walk into the shop and you go through a barrier. I think you scan your phone on the way in so that they know who you are. And then the shop is full of sensors and cameras tracking everything you do. And then also all the shelves have weighing scales built in.
Mm.
And the idea was is that you could walk around, take anything you want, pick it up off the shelves. You don't need a bag or anything. You can stick it straight in your backpack or, you know, in your own bag. And then you could wander out at the end and your phone, your card, your Amazon account would be automatically charged.
Freaky. It feels like you're shoplifting.
But it was amazing. Yeah. And the problem with the shoplifting thing was that I would then walk into Waitrose and absentmindedly put stuff in my pockets, forgetting that I'm not in an Amazon store.
Could you do the Indiana Jones weight swap? In a bag of sand.
Well, they did, when they initially launched it in America, in the press release, they promised everyone that they wouldn't prosecute, and they sort of challenged people to try and shoplift, because whole point was to try and build a foolproof system that was automated, and they had to test it.
That's quite a good use of funds, actually. Just like,
I would love that.
Swallow the shoplifting cost for the sake of the research and development. Like, oh, look, they did the Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah.
That's useful info. We'll let them have the champagne. One major advantage of supermarkets, which had everything in one place, is you cut down on staff costs, because you didn't need like a clerk to buy everything for you, or an attendant to find things for you.
Yeah, it got cheaper because of the economy of scale.
And so they were willing to pay, because people said, well, people will shoplift if there are fewer staff members. And they were like, yes, but the savings are good enough. We'll swallow that cost.
Yeah. So it's all built in.
Mm-hmm. Which I suppose is happening with self-service. There's been a big wave of shoplifting, and actually it's probably too much and is also illegal, so don't do it. But like it's costing the supermarkets more than they're saving on the supermarket self-checkout.
Shoplifting is just passing some of the savings on to the consumer.
Wasn't there something in the news about how Amazon were pretending to have all these fancy cameras, but actually, I mean, the cameras are real, but there were human beings watching them, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So there was like a quote-unquote scandal
because
that, like, they came out in the newspaper, because Amazon was saying, well, this is like an automated shop. The cameras, like, it's AI, basically. The computers will track you and, like, work out what it was. And then it transpired that actually, for a lot of it, the images were being sent to like a call center, basically, at the other side of the world. And so it was people just watching you, following you around and like watching what you put in the bag. The problem is though, like, it was an experiment and they were training. The whole point is they were developing the technology. So you kind of do need the people, people to check that it's working properly.
So they're just watching what we buy. Like, we're the product in that.
We are always the product.
The loyalty cards know so much about you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I was looking into the automation and like self-checkout and everything because I thought, oh, this is a new thing. But I found actually there was some historic examples of self-service. So there was the same guy, Clarence Saunders, who founded Piggly Wiggly.
Piggly Wiggly.
He also created a store in Memphis called Kidoozle.
What is happening?
I know. Difficult second store name followed from the difficult first store name. This is in 1937. Apparently, it might come from the phrase key does all because it's a key-based system. The idea is that there's a supermarket. All the products are behind glass, like display cases. Yeah. You would go around as a customer and browse and decide what you want. And then you have a special key, like you're given a key when you go in, and you kind of put the key next to each item. And the machinery would kind of like punch a paper punch system, old computerized thing. It would sort of stamp a special pattern. And then there would be machinery that would calculate your full bill at the end. And then all the actual groceries would be sent along a conveyor belt to you where you would collect them. So this is like... So that's futuristic. So this is like Amazon Go, but like in the 30s.
How does it get out of the case?
So I think those are display versions. So you go through and you're like, I want one of those cakes. And then in the back, there's loads of machinery and people then putting your order together.
This sounds more complicated than
that. Maybe it's a bit more like Argos. It's a bit like the Argos in the Argos catalogue, where you like, it's like you walk through the catalogue and then you have all your bits ordered. It was way ahead of its time.
Oh, it sounds like something out of the Jetsons.
Yeah. Mm. So it was a really cool idea, but I think it had a really complicated system of like electrical circuits and conveyor belts and chutes, and it just didn't
Sounds very Wallace and Gromit.
It broke down a lot. Yeah, I think it didn't work. But it lasted until 1949, so like, you know, pretty impressive. And there's some cool pictures you can look up online of it.
The golden years.
Yeah.
So that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, questions or suggestions for future topics by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
And don't forget to scan your club card. I should say it like a machine. Don't forget to scan your club card.
That was really good.
That was really good. You spend far too long in
Tesco. The one impression I can do is the guy on the self-checkout at Tesco's.
And we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Onrio, Alex Bell, and me, Jack Chambers. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with: thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.